So I think we're gonna go ahead and get started, everyone.
Simon.
And some more people will be joining, but it's open throughout the hour. So we get started. Good evening and welcome to the 2020 Real Abilities New Jersey Film Festival. I'm Christine Lemesianu, Associate Dean in the College of the Arts at Montclair State University. And it gives me great pleasure to do the introductions tonight to the launch of our first virtual festival. A couple of reminders before we get started. Our conversation tonight is live captioned, and I invite all who have joined to make ample use of the chat box, as well as the Q&A box, to pose any questions to our panel. If anyone has any technical difficulties, you can also submit questions to our email, realabilitiesnj@montclair.edu. And I will put that email in the chat box as well. We will be monitoring that email, and you can post questions, and we'll try to bring as many of your questions to our panel. Real Abilities is driven by disability inclusiveness, and thus fosters diversity. The films and documentaries featured in this year's New Jersey lineup bring authentic stories, representations, and great talents to life and showcase this amazing diversity. Even though this year we cannot come together at our usual movie theaters or auditoriums or community centers to screen and discuss, I'm grateful that we have found new inclusive ways to gather as a community and engage with each other, even if some of you are doing so in your pajamas, that's okay too. I would like to thank Marie Sparks, the CART administrator who led the way in moving our film festival forward this year, as well as the entire Real Abilities International team and Yara Kadem for all their support and ongoing guidance as we transition to this virtual format. And of course, our continued success as a community is made possible by a generous grant from the Kessler Foundation. So everyone, I hope you enjoyed the series Blind Love as much as I did, because, you know, in all honesty, how can we not fall in love with people who are searching for love in their own unique ways? So I'd like to take a moment just to introduce our moderator and panelists for tonight, all the filmmakers and actors of Blind Love who are joining tonight's conversation. And please wave to the audience as I introduce you. First, we have our moderator tonight, Elaine Gerber.
Hello.
She's associate professor in the Department of Anthropology here at Montclair State University. And her work is a medical anthropologist and disability studies scholar. And then we have the amazing cast of Blind Love. You probably recognize them if you have seen the series. Solomon.
Hello.
Who now, I believe, lives in Florida. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And then we have Simon.
Hello.
And Simon, you're in New York?
Yep.
Yep, okay. And we have Joni Martinez joining. And Joni, you're in Texas?
I am.
Yeah, okay. And we also have Mario Bonds. And Mario, I'm not sure, where are you joining us from tonight?
Maryland, actually. Salutations, everyone.
Okay. And in addition to the cast, we also have the filmmaking talent behind the series with us tonight. We have Australian US-based Patty Zagarella, who is the creator of Blind Love, right? And she's an award-winning documentary filmmaker. And she has also done work with feature films, and she also serves as executive producer to many unscripted series on a range of networks. So thank you, Patty, for being with us. And finally, we also have Ben Wolf, the cinematographer of the Blind Love series. Ben's work also extends to both documentary work, feature film, and experimental work. And Ben also teaches here cinematography at Montclair State University. So welcome, one and all. Thank you for joining us. And at this time, Elaine, I'm going to turn it over to you. If you can take it away and have a great conversation, everyone. I'm going to be somewhere here in the background.
Thank you.
Christine. I'd also like to give a couple thanks.
before I begin. So of course, thanks to everybody involved in the Real Abilities Film Festival. Everybody here at Montclair, Kathleen, Miko, Christine, Marie, I hope I'm not forgetting anybody, and I apologize if I am, as well as obviously to all of our panelists and the filmmakers for trekking in today from afar. So I am absolutely thrilled to be here and be the moderator for this. And as I told the folks at Real Abilities on campus, that I would have been in tears if they had not let me moderate this panel. So just as a little brief background, my for anyone who wants an audio description of me, I am a middle-aged, white, identified woman with mostly auburn hair. And today I am wearing a soft pink sweater with a warm, with a very warm wrap around my neck and glasses, and I'm standing against a deep orange wall. I am someone who has spent many years immersed in the blind community. When I first saw the series, I was really struck by how authentic it was. It just seemed such a genuine and accurate representation that honestly, I thought it had to have been made by blind people. And I loved so much that it showed people doing average everyday things like, you know, drinking and playing cards and stalking people on Facebook and, you know, having a sense of humor. Things that I think a lot of mainstream America really misses about blindness and blind people and their lives, of course. The other part about my bio that wasn't mentioned when I was introduced is that I have both a professional and personal interest here. So before coming to Montclair, I used to work at the American Foundation for the Blind for 5 years. But most of my knowledge about blindness, it actually comes from a personal experience. So, which is the real reason why I'm so happy to be here with you all tonight. This is very personal for me. I first fell in love with and was married to a blind man for the better part of a decade. So I have a little bit of experience with this, albeit on the flip side as a sighted person. But I will say, given this experience that I had, I to this day remain shocked and offended by many of the incredibly ableist things that people have said to me about this relationship, and as though I were some sort of saint or martyr or something, all the while thinking they were giving me a compliment. So honestly, this series was really a breath of fresh air. And I think beyond that, it gives all of us, sighted and blind and anywhere in between, some sort of reassurance about humanity. In that people are capable of being more of something more than superficiality, and that we can see each other for who we really are without judgment or preconceptions. And that's something I think we all need quite a lot right now, in my humble opinion. So it gives us hope that we can all find love and connection, and that we are all worthy of love and connection. This matters. So, I guess given the introduction and the sense of starting with the sense of authenticity, my questions actually wanted to start off with questions for the filmmakers about the process itself. I guess, how did you come up with the content and write the script? And a related question, did you spontaneously rely on these actual blind people and their engaging stories, or was this primarily kind of pre-scripted dialogue? And if it was the former, how many actors did you have to go through before you found these four gems?
So, okay. it was a process. In terms of the subject, the topic, and the concept, it came about randomly, as most documentaries do. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who's an ophthalmologist, who told me about a blind patient of his who had fallen in love, was getting married. And this sparked this conversation about attraction and if there was a difference between sighted and blind and visually impaired people. So that just kind of led to this idea that I at that point, I did not know anyone from the population. I had plenty of preconceived notions, as most people do. And it was just, it just piqued my interest. And I thought in this visual world that we live in, where everyone's swiping left and right to connect with people, is attraction, is when a blind and visually impaired person falls in love, is that deeper because it's not based off of sight? So I started the project with that in mind. That was my intent. That quickly went out the window once I met, I actually met blind and visually impaired people. And then I guess to answer your question in terms of everything was based on the former, everything was based off of the subject's lives and story. The NFB and the ACB, both national blind organizations, supported the project and put out a casting call for me. And at that point, I wasn't sure if anyone would want to talk to a non-visually impaired person or if anyone would even want to participate in the project. And I received hundreds of emails from different age ranges, married, non-married, it was a population that wanted to tell their story. So I realized that I was onto something at that point. And then through the process, it kind of whittled down to young single people or young adults who were in that phase of their lives where they were actually wanting to get serious and wanting to meet someone. And then that's how I basically met everyone through the NFB and ACB casting call, except for Simon, who I met through Achilles International, the New York City chapter. And he was kind enough to let me be his running guide. And that's how we connected and became friends. And I got his story.
Gotcha. Ben, I don't know if you wanted to jump in there, if there was any part of that that resonated for you.
Well, you know, as a cinematographer, you know, we one thing I learned early on, this was Mario really helping me with this. We set up an interview and I was lighting it. And usually the subject and the director, Mario and Patty, will have a small conversation while I'm doing lights. And I always tried to be quiet and be unobtrusive. And at one point Mario said, "Ben, I think you're behind me, but you know, since I can't see, it kind of creeps me out. So if you can, when you're working on light, could you just sort of mention where you are?" So then it occurred to me, oh yeah. So if I had to adjust a backlight, say, "Patty, I think that light's a little bright. Let me just go over and fix that. Oh, Patty, I'm going to get the microphone a little closer." And then Mario would know and just be at ease. And it was a whole different way of working. It was against, you know, decades of training for me. And then it helped me so much with the process of filming all the other days where I knew, that this is how I should behave. This is how I should interact. I think we got some wonderful material. You know, it's not very often that I get to film a first date in a gondola car, and somehow I was trusted enough to be allowed to do that.
Yeah. This is awesome. Thank you for that. You'll be able to tell from my questions, I am clearly not a filmmaker. So, you know, forgive my muddling around about language and roles and whatnot. So I apologize in advance. So you've already kind of, I'm going to go a little off script here. I have tons of notes because that's who I am, but we've already been having a little bit of conversation before this started. And based on what you've just said to me, so now I want to just ask the four leads from the web series, have you always wanted to be actors? Or do you now want to be actors? Has this changed anything for you in terms of your kind of career trajectories in that regard?
This is Simon speaking. I'm not opposed to it. If ever like another opportunity comes up, I'm definitely going to consider it. I have actually taken acting classes, two semesters of it in college, but that was more theater-based acting. So it'd be interesting to one day either take, I don't know, film acting or something like that, because I heard it's two different things. So it's something, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
This is Solomon. I don't really have any interest in that. I think it would be cool to you know, maybe just have you know, small parts or something in some type of comedy or something like that. But you know, from I think it was a really cool experience learning how it all works, because I never knew anything about it before doing this project. And once I did the project, I was like, this is so much work. And now I understand why. And I mean, ours is real life. I can imagine, you know, actors have to do these shots over and over and over again. And it's like, no wonder they get paid so much. Now it makes sense. They deserve it.
This is Joni. I kind of agree, you know, with Simon in that, and Solomon too, in that I hadn't done this before. So it was a totally new experience to me. And I thought it was kind of fun. You know, it was very interesting. I learned a lot about, you know, kind of how the process goes. I feel like I asked a lot of questions about it just because I did find it very interesting. So I think that in some ways, you know, it could be, you know, like Simon said, I would definitely, you know, enjoy another opportunity for something like this. And, you know, just even really any kind of aspect of sort of the world of film, whether it's in front of the camera or behind, you know, I just think it's a cool process. It's fun. It's interesting. And it's exciting. You know, no day is really ever the same, it seems like. So I thought it was very exciting.
Thank you all for that. This is Elaine again. I think we may have lost Mario. Oh, maybe you're back. I'm not sure. Part of the reason I asked was that the four of you are genuinely charismatic and charming, and it comes across very much so in the series. So it seemed to me very spontaneous, and I didn't know how much of it was really spontaneous in that regard, based on your own wit and charm, and how much was, you know, kind of.
I will say this is Mario Bond. So I will say that it is definitely us, and it's all organic and it's wonderful. But for me, I did have a little bit of film experience, and I do. I'm totally blind, but I love the camera. But outside of that, if you talk to me long enough, you'll get all 20 of my personalities. So it's all it's all organic, and was all extremely real. So and that's why I was I loved participating, because I believe in, you know, doing things that are going to be educational and entertaining. And that's why this was such an amazing project.
It's kind of funny that you say it was spontaneous, because after some people saw the documentary, everyone just kept telling me, this is Simon speaking, by the way, everyone just kept telling me, you look good on camera. You look good on camera. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. Thank you. So.
This is Elaine. Maybe they like the new duds. I don't know. That's a little joke. Sorry, my bad. Quirky humor.
No, it's okay.
So I guess this, going back to the filmmakers a little bit for a minute here. Once you had this idea, Patty, and then I guess you reached out to Ben, and when you found your actors, the ones you selected and wanted to work with, can you, I'm guessing that there are up and coming filmmakers or budding filmmakers on the call. I don't know. I don't really know who our audience is, but I'm guessing there are some. So would you have any, can you talk a little bit, maybe you and Ben both from your respective positions, like what kind of research or other prep work was necessary to be done in order to really, not just for this exact show, but in general, in order to really represent people authentically in a project like this? And if you had any guidance for people about kind of strategies and for something that I'm assuming was a really highly collaborative method.
Well, in terms of getting comfortable with the subject matter, because I, like I said, I knew no one from the population. So it was kind of a daunting task, because I wasn't sure. And I don't have anyone in my life either who is has a disability or is differently abled. So I kind of came at it from a very naive point of view, and that was daunting and scary, and I wasn't quite sure how to tackle it. But once I did get that initial positive reaction from the population, from the time of my research, basically was a year worth of research. And that was talking to people. Again, the NFB and ACB, Eric Bridges from the American Council of the Blind was very useful, a great resource. Christine Ha, who was the blind chef,
Master Chef winner.
She came on as an executive producer and also as a consultant. So we had a deal from the outset. She loved the concept. She thought it would be great to normalize the population, break down stereotypes. And so we had this deal that I could ask her anything that I thought might be ignorant or offensive or whatever the case may be. So she said, ask me anything. And then I have to say that everyone that I spoke to was the same. I mean, it was this, I had people holding my hand throughout the process. And so to the point that it just became, I asked so many questions from the get-go that I just stopped asking the questions when I realized that what I was doing here was creating a project about sameness, not difference. Mm-hmm. So basically it was a year worth of research for me.
And mm-hmm. if I can add, you also listened a lot. Yeah. So, right. I don't know, Ben, if there was anything you wanted to add or anything that you went through that was a kind of a learning process that you want to share with others to help them in this process?
Well, you know, for me, the big thing is I have a great work relationship with Patty. She's a good friend and she's a terrific director. And we are on a similar wavelength. And she trusts me and I can suss out what she's looking for when we're seeing a sequence come alive in front of us and get an angle from here, get an angle from there, who to follow. And then I also trust her when she just whispers in my ear, oh, something interesting is happening there. Why don't you go there? Because it's worked for us before and she has a fantastic taste and that humanity of listening and asking questions. I just followed that leader and just listened as well.
All right, now I've got a question for the panelists, the actors, humans. I don't really know what to call you. People?
Participants.
Participants?
Participants are fine.
Yeah,
participants. Okay, participants. One thing that I noticed, and one reason maybe that you all are so successful, is that you seem to have a lot of social support. So you seem to have close family, strong friendships, and I guess, again, not knowing really who's on this call, but assuming there are some blind people, visually impaired people on the call, what advice do you have or strategies that you can recommend for other young people, other young blind people who are trying to date? And like Mario, I know you had mentioned in, I don't know if it was the first series or second series about, you know, having your sister drive you, arriving early, things like that. But beyond transportation issues, do you have any suggestions for how people can maintain or assert their independence, especially for people who maybe don't have large support networks and to rely on that you had? And how central was that? How important was that even when you were dating or as you began dating?
God, that's such a loaded question.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I say it's a loaded question because just as it is with individuals who are not disabled, you know, dating can be, and as you saw in the documentary, dating is such an individualized experience, no matter how, you know, no matter how formulaic we try to make it with, you know, the using websites and apps and what have you. But I can say that my first, you know, it's great that I do have the social support, but independent of the social support, you know, I have to have a good sense of self-worth. I have to have a good sense of determination, you know, self-awareness and what have you. And then more importantly, where I can be independent, right? It's important for me to live in that. You know, just as, again, the non-disabled community, you know, you quote unquote want to put your best foot forward to quote unquote be the best you possible so that you can be something that someone does want to date or want to go out with, so to speak. And then you add the plus of having the social support network there. But to get to the crux of your question, for those who may not have the support network, I think it again goes to all of the items that I just discussed. You know, with that independence, obviously comes familiarity with technology. And again, that self-awareness, being bold, which are often, all of those themes are things that people usually have to work on and develop over time. But that's the way that I would look at it. And that's the way that I handle life, even when I don't have access to a social network, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. This is Joni, and I completely agree with Mario. I work in the field of vocational rehabilitation. So I work with adults who have gone blind recently. And it's all about, like Mario said, kind of just self-worth and confidence. And I think a big part of that just comes from the very basic idea that as blind people, we need to kind of realize and understand that we're still human and that we're still capable of living the way that we want to live and living the lives that we want. And, like, you know, I think, you know, definitely social support helps, but I think a lot of that just comes from kind of an inner motivation to just be the best you that you can be, you know? And in the beginning, like I said, I work with, you know, vocational rehab and individuals who have gone blind later in life. And so when blindness is brand new to you, it's scary and you don't know what to do. But, you know, the biggest piece of advice that I can say is just don't give up, because it's going to get easier, you know? And that's life in general. And eventually that's going to be dating. And everything is difficult in the beginning. You know, I don't care if you're blind or sighted or, you know, deaf or hearing, you know, anything that's new to you is going to be tough. But if you work your way through it and you just keep going, then it's going to eventually get easier. And all of those small steps and small skills and small accomplishments are going to build up into, you know, a bigger, just a bigger, better life for you.
Thank you, Johnny.
This is Solomon. Yeah, I mean, there's not really too much to add on. I mean, what Mario and Joni already said is pretty much what I was going to say. I guess it's just, you know, self-esteem. You got to have self-esteem, and you got to, you know, everybody has insecurities, but like they said, whether you're sighted or not, you know, the way you present yourself is the way that people are going to act around you. So if you're, you know, it's funny that, because I'm a VR, I work with VR students as well as an AT instructor. And, you know, that's like Joni said, usually people come in and they're, you know, they're depressed and they're down on themselves. You know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life now? You know, this and that. And I always tell them, well, you know, you're going to be blind whether you're sitting in your room and you're depressed about it, or if you go out and, you know, have a good time and meet people. So yeah, social people around you, like your supporters and stuff like that, yeah, it helps out a lot. But really, you know, it comes down to us. You know, the way that you, like I said, the way you present yourself is the way people are going to treat you around you. So that's pretty much the best advice I can give you.
This is Simon speaking. I'm basically just going to agree with what the three have said. And that is, confidence is, and self-esteem is key. And I have, you guys saw this in the series, I had to learn how to develop that and overcome any insecurities I had, so.
Yeah, and that's, just really quickly, if I can add, that's the piece of it that I you know, definitely don't want to be lost, is that it's, you know, it's great and it's wonderful for all of us sitting here as, you know, four confident, visually impaired individuals to say, hey, have confidence. But you know, to Solomon's point, we're not going to take from it that for all of us, you know, it took some climbing to get here. And so when you get to the point where for yourself, your disability is no longer the elephant in the room, because I know for me, when I did have insecurities, a lot of time it was the elephant in the room, but I was the only person who was aware that it was the elephant in the room. And living in my head, so to speak. So when you finally get out of that and you know, you accepted it, accepted that confidence does grow to where you'll end up living the way we all do, whereas, you know, people are shocked that we're handling life as regular people and it's all incidentally happening against the backdrop of being totally blind or visually impaired, so to speak. That's what you'll get. So we don't want to take from it that it definitely takes some climbing to get here, but you can get there.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to speak over anyone. Yeah, Patty, I'm really struck because as myself, I'm an introvert. So when I saw you all four doing the things you were doing, I thought about myself, just how hard that would be, and not related to vision at all, just about personality. So yeah, Patty, I know you wanted to jump in there.
No, I just wanted to add that, you know, Simon and Solomon were also very, like, I watched their growth through this experience as well. And I believe that maybe the documentary gave them that push to, you know, Solomon went grocery shopping for the first time and allowed us to film that. But when I'd met him a year prior, he's like, there was no way that he was leaving the house without assistance from a friend or family. So, you know, I saw that growth happen while we were filming. So yeah, it's possible if you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Kudos to you, because I go into a grocery store and feel like I'm hyperventilating. I can't stand being in grocery stores. So good for you.
Thank you.
Mario, me either. This is
I know the feeling.
And it has nothing to do with the pandemic. I've always been that way. I just can't stand it. I walk in the door and I'm like, oh my God, I need an inhaler.
I walk in and I end up there for like 25 minutes. I'm just like, I want to get out of here.
I'll go in with, you know, a super long list. And then I'm like, I don't actually need that. I don't need that either. So I come out with like half of the stuff that I went in trying to get just so I can get out more quickly, you know.
This is Elaine. I actually did a project with about food access among blind people, and it actually a broad group of people in not just blind people in New Jersey, but it was actually striking to me how to see that scene, Solomon, because I asked people repeatedly about shopper's assistance, about getting help once you got into the store, someone came over and how they helped you get your groceries. And people would repeatedly tell me that they could put things in their cart that they didn't ask for, that they didn't think you guys could cook. So they would ask for something fresh and they'd put the like microwavable version in or something like that. So that scene actually was really, it really struck me. On a personal level also, to people's hearts is through food.
Although we never found out whether she enjoyed the dinner you cooked.
That's true.
I don't know if it showed it in there or not, but the Nick, my buddy, messed up. We were talking and then he got distracted and then it was like overdone, but we still ate it. And
that's okay.
I mean,
it's crab, the thought that counts.
Can't not eat that. You got to do it. Right. You know, it doesn't matter. So, yeah.
It's the thought that counts. It's
exactly the thought, yeah. So, still eating crab legs. I think I did good.
So to take it in a little bit of a different direction, we had a, unless people want to talk about food more, I could talk about food all day. So we had a question actually from one of the audience members. So, to the actors, participants, how had your experience on the show changed your perception of what love means? Great question.
It hasn't really I don't think it has for me. I don't really think it has for me, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think it has, although I'm a bit confused because I told my 10-year-old to ask Alexa what the definition of love was last night. And one of the definitions was the needing or requiring or having great use of someone. So I'm not really sure if I agree with that.
But yeah, I like that. That's good.
So, you know, in that lens, I guess I love a lot of people. but no, I don't think the documentary has... I don't think the documentary has necessarily changed how I see love. I will say that it's definitely changed, it's hugely changed the way, my level of confidence. and the way that I approach blindness. You know, things have changed a bit to where it's not as detrimental as it was, the whole experience of not telling people ahead of time that I'm blind, and then them showing up at the table and realizing, you know, things. I've realized that things have changed out there, that, you know, now you might go on a date or something, or I won't tell someone I'm blind ahead of time. They come to the table and they're like, okay, I just care about the fact that you're as handsome as you were in your photo, and that you're not a catfish. So that's what has changed for me, but not necessarily the crux of the love phenomenon.
This is Joni. I think that in a lot of ways it did change some things for me, because I feel like I was very like hesitant to, you know, actually having a real relationship, and I was pretty resistant to it, I think, because of, you know, just fear and fear of a lot of things, you know, definitely getting hurt, also just kind of like a sense of obligation. I think in a lot of ways Patty was sort of like a therapist, because as you know, we moved through the process, we talked a lot about sort of what was going on in life and stuff, and she really, you know, and she was very real with me, which I very much appreciate. But, you know, there were just times that I had to kind of look at my ideas and my thoughts and stuff and say, like, that's not realistic, or, you know, maybe I am wrong about this, or maybe I need to kind of give it a chance. And yeah, I mean, I still have those fears sometimes, you know, but I think I've definitely become a lot more open to kind of navigating through them rather than just ignoring them.
This is Solomon. I guess I think mine changed a little bit, because as Patty was saying previously about, you know, my confidence and stuff like that, and I wouldn't go do things on my own before, you know, and so doing this film definitely helped me come out of my shell a little bit more, as far as, like Mario said, you know, just accepting the blindness and stuff like that. And so, I mean, before this film or this project even started, I thought, you know, there's no way I'm going to find a girl that wants to be with a blind person for the rest of her life. You know, that's not what a girl doesn't wake up and go, oh, you know, my knight in shining armor is this blind guy. So, you know, that's what I always thought. And then, you know, doing the film made me realize, like, all right, well, you know, I'm not the only one out there, you know, with, just because I'm blind doesn't mean I, you know, I can't have love as well, you know? So it kind of helped me to become more confident, and then, you know, talk to the ladies at the bars and clubs. So, yeah, I don't know if it actually changed though, to answer your question.
Well, then that sucks, because I told myself that the people I ended up dating, they did wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm going to go out and get me a blind guy, and he's going to be chocolate with big lips. Good point.
Who was speaking? Go ahead.
Sorry, that was just... It was Solomon. I just said, hey, I got you with the big lips.
That's pretty funny.
I have a related question, partly mine, partly from one of the audience members. I'm going to merge them together. But a lot is made in the series about issues of disclosure, if you will, what to put on one's online profile, at what point do you tell someone that you're blind, etc. So I was hoping that you could talk a little bit more about that. And the question from the audience was, how do all of you feel now about putting your blindness on an online profile?
Well, this is Solomon. I think Mario should probably start that.
And there's a second.
Yeah, since I'm the I'm the habitual prevaricator, in the sense that I wouldn't tell people that I'm totally blind. And we just kind of let them find out when they got to the restaurant or wherever we were. Like I said before, I think that my confidence level increased even in that department. You can be the most confident person, but still have residual insecurities. Now, for myself, my blindness is the very, very, very last thing on the list. So while as I don't jump in and put on the profile, you know, a flag that says, hey, totally blind. I do mention it. I may mention it somewhere, or mention it if we do have dialogue prior to a date. I will say, well, I am visually impaired. And then as the discussion goes on, you know, I'll qualify what that means. I said, oh, well, I can't see anything. Really? So you won't be able to see my face? No, I won't be able to. So don't waste 6 hours on your hair. No, you still should, because you know, people tell me what's going on. But outside of that, it's the disclosure piece of it, I'm not as afraid of it anymore since I've realized that things have changed quite a bit. You know, I think the world can, in some ways, can still be shallow. Mm-hmm. But again, it goes back to me. It's, if you don't accept that part of me, then to hell with you.
You know,
I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. Well, if you don't accept it, then God bless you. There we go.
You know, I know I didn't, this is Joni. There wasn't a lot of me doing online dating, in the series, but in the past I have done online dating, and I feel still to this day, I don't obviously do online dating anymore, but with Mario, I agree, just because I never thought that the blindness thing was the first thing that I wanted to share about myself, because I didn't think that it was the first thing that somebody would relate to me about, you know, and just like Mario was saying, you know, eventually we'd obviously talk on the phone, the conversation would come up, well, what do you do? Well, I do vocational rehab. Well, how did you decide to do that? Oh, well, I'm blind and I want to help people kind of in the same situation, you know? And so it would come up like that. So I always kind of wanted it to come up like more organically, because it wasn't the first thing I thought somebody could relate to. And I wanted to really just like make sure that my relationships were based on more than that, you know? So I agree with Mario.
This is Solomon. In the past I've done both with online dating. So I never knew what to put. I'd always ask my friends, like, should I put it on my profile or not? You know, so I actually did both. I would start conversations, like Joni was saying, and you know, let them get to know me, and then I would call it dropping the bomb on them, because, you know, it did happen numerous times where I have these great conversations and, you know, everything looks like it's going good. But then I would be like, well, I got to meet him in person, and there's no way I'm pulling a Mario and showing up at a restaurant and, you know, letting them find out then. I mean, I don't know. To me, it's just so awkward. But, you know, I drop the bomb on them, and then it always happened, like the conversations would just slowly get less and less and less, and then I'd be like, all right, I know what's happening here. But then the flip side, you know, I would when I put it, you know, on my profile or just say it at the beginning, you know, it didn't really work either. So basically I pretty much struck out with online dating.
This is Simon. So personally, I will tell you that, and my friend will tell you, I am the worst person when it comes to having an online presence. The most of the time I do social media to promote for my podcast that I'm doing, but personally, I'm really bad with either online dating or just having the social media presence. I have tried it, the whole picture thing, photo thing, is quite daunting. I don't personally have the patience. What I will say though is, if I had a choice, I would not put it on my profile. I would just wait until the conversation came up, like Joni says, organically. And I have done that in the past, where there is this app I stumbled upon called a Dial Up. And it's basically an app where you have different lines, and there's like a music line, a book line, you choose the line. Whenever that line calls, you get connected to a random person, and then you have a conversation, and then somehow it comes up that I'm blind, but I don't automatically mention it. So that's
Is that this is Solomon. Is that Dial Up? Is that like a dating website, or is it just for, you know, people that have the same common interest or whatever?
People same common interests, but I'm always, you know, I always have that thing in my mind, like, even though it's not really meant for dating, you could always develop a relationship and maybe get it there. So you never know.
This is Elaine again. I hope I'm not cutting this off. There was actually a second part to that question that I didn't read, and I apologize. I'm not sure I really know what it means. So I'm going to read it, and then maybe the person who typed it into the chat could elaborate on the question. But the other half of that says, time for the talk yet, Mario. And then there's some kind of emoticon of a face, which I can't, I don't know.
Oh, I know what that meant, I think. It was when Mario was telling his 10-year-old to ask the Echo about love. And I think that question was directed towards time for the talk yet, as in.
That is what it was, yeah. It was about.
Thank
I'm
you for
still
that.
Confused, but I'll thank, just go with what you guys said. I'm still confused, but okay.
I guess since we were on the subject, I don't know if we were even on the subject, but here we are now. So given the different expectations about for men and women in our society, in terms of not just dependency and independence, but so many things, I was just wondering if we could talk a little bit more about gender and the kind of how that might play out in some of these things in terms of dating. And I realize that you all each only have your own experience. Can't compare it to somebody else's experience. So, because you've only inhabited your own body, but has the kind of gender expectations impacted you in terms of your approach to dating or how you negotiate things in your current relationship? Like for example, are there times as a man, maybe you felt you had to, where your date had to take the leave or questioned whether you could be a breadwinner, or conversely for Joni or any of you, you know, what whether what was expected of you was different or very clear to you as being a gendered issue?
Go ahead,
Sonny.
It's funny you ask that because so I had one of my insecurities actually, I don't know if it showed while doing it, but it was actually the fact, so I'm a guy but I'm really small or rather I'm short. I'm about like 5'3" tall, 5'3" about like 5'3", and so basically my I guess insecurity was, oh, you know, like would someone want to go out with me? I'm not as tall as most of the guys I know. I'm not as built. And you know, I work out and stuff. I run now, but it was something that I used to struggle with. And so it's funny that you asked that. I'm over it now, but yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that question because I've you know, a big part of you wants to answer it the same way we've been answering everything in the spirit of the documentary, that it's about sameness and no differences. Translation to this particular subject, that obviously the whole gender expectation or gender no expectation is the same as the sighted community. But not in every area. I've lived every part of it where I've had women who tried to mother me instead of date me. you know, I've had situations where women have been upset because I was so-called too independent and they didn't feel needed. And I've also, you know, I've also been in situations where you know, at first women thought they were going to need to run because they thought they were going to be babysitting until they found out that no, he's fine, he's independent, everything else works except the eyes. Don't ask any deeper questions than that. But anyway, yeah, so they had to, so being on every side of that is kind of like, it goes back to that individual piece of it that, you know, I think from a personality perspective that I am. You know, if like, for example, and I'm almost done, if there's something in the house that I need and I lost something, my first instinct is to get up in all of my blind glory and go, quote unquote, look for it, translation, fill around for it. Like, yeah. I'll go do before I ask for help. And I think that's disarming to a lot of sighted individuals, so to speak. Yeah. But again, that's my personality. I have blind friends who are not that way, who immediately, well, I can't say I'm that way all the time because my 10-year-old is sick of me calling his name because every 5 minutes I say, Mika, where's the coffee I just had 30 seconds ago? So I think it just depends. It's still individual when it comes to that whole gender expectation, but I do appreciate when women don't try to mother me when they are supposed to be loving me. Don't ask me the questions, like I said. But yeah.
Mario, it's funny that you mentioned how you are the type of person that will feel around for things and not ask for help until you really need it.
Right.
In a lot of situations, I'm the same way, but I don't know why, but just bring back a memory when I'm walking through a college campus and then this person is like, do you need help? I say, no, I'm okay. And then I hear this other person tell her they don't like it when you ask them for help. They don't like it when you ask them if they want help. So.
No.
Well, I appreciate that. That means somebody's been reading something. Yes. Don't let us solicit. That's good. You should have turned around and asked that person if they wanted a cookie, because that's good.
This is Solomon. I guess the answer to your question is, for me, a little bit different going into dating, because I lost my sight later on in life, so I've had the chance to live sighted and not, and so I know I'm blessed for that, but yes, I have the and I kind of still do to this day have kind of the thought that it's probably not the most popular answer, but I guess this is the way I was raised, is that the men are, supposed to be the breadwinners. Now, I understand that, women can do the same thing as we can, probably most of the time better. But, I just have that feeling that, essentially, no matter what I do, if my wife is probably going to make more money than me, and I have to be okay with that, and hopefully she's okay with that. And so what I try to do is just make up in other areas that I don't, I can't make as much money, I can't drive, so there's things that she's gonna have to do to pick up the slack. But then I just try to pick up slack with other things, like I don't think Francis has ever done the dishes in the entire time that we've ever been together, so
yay,
that's
good. Nice.
that's where I, I do the dishes and the laundry. So, to answer your question, yeah, I do have that preconceived thought that, I should be the breadwinner. I am the man. I'm supposed to take care of the woman, and they're supposed to, not have to work harder than me. But, that's just, I just have to, I'm probably never going to get over it. Like, it's not a thing that I need to get over. It's just, I just need to understand that, obviously she's with me, not because of my money. So, but hey, maybe I could make more money. I could, win a lottery or something. So that'd be good.
Solomon, I have to relate with you there. I've also been raised the same way. I'm still told to this day by my family that, oh, you need to be the breadwinner. Most girls don't want a man who doesn't make a lot of money. So it's a hard thing to come by and me too. So
I agree with y'all on that. I mean, I was pretty much raised in, sort of the same way, very kind of gender role-esque. And this is, something I've kind of thought of a lot lately, just because I have a friend who's sighted, and of course I'm blind. So she started dating a guy who was blind, and she knows about blindness. She's actually been around blind people for quite some time now, so she's not afraid of it or anything like that. But when she first started dating this guy, first time she's ever dated a blind guy, she had some fears about it, and she came to me, and of course she's my friend, so she can say whatever she wants. No offense, and she asked, I never realized that I felt this way, but what if we want to go for dinner and I don't want to drive home, or I want to have a drink or two and don't want to drive home, or what if I'm tired and I don't want to drive, or what if I don't want to go to the grocery store that day, or I want to send him on an errand, how am I gonna be completely confident that, you know, he's going to be able to do that without me. And I think most of her fears kind of centered around the driving thing, you know. But we kind of talked about it, and a lot of it, I think, is kind of just being, you have to be creative, you know. So, you know, if they wanted to go out for dinner, you know, he could pitch in for an Uber, you know, or get the Uber. And of course, you know, it depends on your financial situation as well. But, you know, you can choose a place that's in walking distance, or, you know, kind of stuff like that. But I think blindness in general takes a lot of creativity, and kind of seeing her kind of go through that. And even honestly, having that or those ideas myself, you know, I've dated both blind and sighted people in the past. And with blindness, I always kind of thought, I don't want to date a guy who's blind because it might be easier to have one who's sighted, you know. But after kind of going through blindness on my own and kind of becoming independent and accepting of it and comfortable with myself, you know, I don't care anymore. Like, it wouldn't matter to me, honestly, if my partner was blind or sighted, just because I can do it. So why couldn't my blind partner do it, you know? But as far as the gender roles thing is concerned, I feel like it seems to me like the male kind of gender roles are a lot more affected in the beginning because of that driving thing and, you know, picking a place out. And I think in the beginning of the dating situation, it is definitely more difficult for the male. You know, for the female, we just have to be fun and, you know, do our hair, Mario. but, you know, eventually it gets to the point, like, well, can she cook? Would she be able to take care of a baby? Would she be able to have a baby without, like, falling over and hurting herself or the child, you know? So I think a lot of there are definitely kind of gender roles that are, you know, doubted in both the male and female perspectives. But I think they just might happen at different times during the process, you know?
That was really,
you know, you speak with such validity when you say that it's harder for the men. I mean, it is. And just really quickly, I want to add parenthetically that for me, when I was living in my head and living in the insecurity of my blindness, I always wanted to be the breadwinner in every relationship I was in, because I felt like, you know, they can do the driving, they can do this, but, you know, it's like, if I'm the financier of everything, then, you know, that's still my power. You know, I still have some power, you know, that whole, you know, I guess a plutocratic mindset, so to speak. And I had to get out of that, where I felt like if I wasn't the breadwinner and I wasn't the person who had all this money, that somehow, you know, then my blindness would be in the front of everything and I wouldn't be as equal as a contributor. And that's sort of a conflated experience of the usual, I'm the man, I want to be the provider, and then the piece of, again, living in the insecurity of blindness, which are two different things that had to be overcome.
Yeah, and thank you all for your honesty on that. I think it does impact people in really different ways. I just a couple of apologies, particularly to Patricia and Ben, because I'm sorry I've been monopolizing the panelists for the conversation. I do have questions. I'm going to come back to you, I promise. Certainly, though, if you want to chime in on any of these things, please feel free to.
I need them talk all night.
And then I have a general apology to everyone who may be watching the webinar. I keep looking down, and if you see me looking down, it's because Christine and Miko keep feeding me questions by text. So they want me to ask. So I'm not like texting with other people randomly while we're doing this. I'm looking down to get the questions for the panelists. So, and here is a related one to what we were just talking about. So what is a primary quality you would like to have? I'm sorry, I can't even read. What is a primary quality that you would like your significant other to have? And I'm gonna merge it with the next question, if you don't mind, this is very personal. Could you share with whom you are in relationships today?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Personally, this is Simon. I currently am not in a relationship. My dating adventures have halted due to the pandemic. However, one primary quality I'd like my significant other to have, I hope this isn't controversial or anything when I say this, but is to be independent of me and not
I would want her to have a life and not kind of be dependent on me. I would want us to be co-partners, and I would want us to I'd want us to be partners, but I wouldn't want to have any codependency in a relationship.
Oh yeah. This is Jenny, and Simon, I completely agree with you. I think that that's one of the biggest reasons that I was so afraid of having a relationship. There's so much to give up, you know what I mean? Not only is there like that fear of, oh my gosh, how is this going to end? But then you also don't want to like be tethered to somebody that's going to kind of take your own personality away from you, you know?
Yeah, I've actually witnessed that.
Oh yeah.
Growing up through people that are close to me, and I'm just like, God, these people are not setting a good example for me of what a relationship should be, I guess. But I don't want that.
No, I completely agree with that. And honestly, I mean, as far as who are we in relationship with, I'm with James from the documentary, who's wonderful. And honestly, that is probably, he has a million and one fantastic qualities. But that's probably one of his biggest, or, you know, his biggest and best is just he was patient with me. But also he's understanding of that. He's able to let me be myself, and, you know, he's able to be himself within our partnership, and we're just, you know, we're happy together as ourselves. And that's certainly, like I said, one of his finer qualities.
So for me, I would say is you have to be a good listener. I have very little patience for bad listeners. It's something I'm trying to work on myself. Because I feel like, you know, that's a huge driver of communication. I try to be an excellent listener, and I have this thing where I expect everybody else to be as well. And it's like, well, everybody else doesn't live in their hearing the way you do, Mario. But, and when I say listener, I'm not just, you know, talking about the physical expectation of being able to hear someone, but actually being able to listen, so that there's substantive communication. And then secondarily, you have to have a love for music and a love for laughter, and to be a kind person. And then also a person who really appreciates health and fitness. That's where I live. And these are sort of things that that are non-negotiable at this particular point.
Mario, I forgot that you like music. I'm a music ed major.
I live and breathe it. that's my I'm on a Zoom. So I still sorry, my listening detected someone sneaking in the room. Yes, good listening. So those are, and when I say about the music stuff, it's like, you know, you can't get upset if I'm, you know, going to be gone on Saturday and Sunday because I have, you know, two 10-hour studio sessions, you know, because I did deal with a woman named Virginia who really felt like I was married to my music as opposed to anything else. But
you know, that's exactly what I meant about codependency.
Yeah. So with that, I believe that, you know, the codependency, I believe a small amount of that is healthy to the degree, because in some ways she's saying, gee, could you make some time for me too? And, you know, you do have to have a give and take for that, and me to be sensitive to say, okay, well, gee, after that, you know, I need to make sure I do something. But period, don't argue with me about music when it's pretty much my last name all the time. So that's the way I feel about that. And then in terms of current relationship, I have rekindled a relationship with someone I was with years ago, and we are now back together. And this time it happens to be a male. So I'm what people would consider pansexual. So I'm now in a relationship with back in a relationship with a male at this point.
This is Solomon. I didn't hear the first question because my camera messed up. Can you ask again?
Yeah, the first question was about what primary quality would you like your significant other to have?
Oh, okay.
What does your camera have to do with listening, Solomon?
You understand, it said I got a 20% battery, so it stopped the thing.
Don't worry, I'm just teasing about listening. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't like you were. The primary quality, I don't know. That's a tough one. The primary is tough because there's so many qualities that I like, but I don't know, kind of like Mario said, just have fun, you know, live, laugh kind of thing. You know, have some of the stuff that I like to do in common, you know, sit by the bonfire, have a bonfire. And when it's 95 degrees out, that's a good quality to have. You know, that's just, I don't know. It's kind of tough. You know, I always get crap for this, but I would like my significant other to be, you know, good looking. And you know, a lot of my friends, obviously you saw in the documentary, know what my taste is. So I kind of go with what they do. And, you know, it's just a thing. I feel that I deserve somebody that I would, you know, think is attractive and stuff like that. So, I think that's a good quality they need to have. And yes, I am still with Francis from the documentary. So, we were actually engaged now. I asked her to marry me on July 1st and said yes. So,
well, congratulations. That means that overdone crab legs definitely go a long way.
I know. and that quality I was saying, apparently everybody says she's good looking, so I'm done.
Yeah, her. Congratulations, Solomon. That's awesome.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
So since we don't have a lot of time, I do really want to ask Patty and Ben this question. That this has been such a great web series, not just a great conversation right now tonight. Any plans for a second series? And is there any way that people can help to promote this series? Maybe get it, you know, picked up by Netflix, Amazon, I don't know. Reach a broader audience than it has reached already, because it's really such a great show.
Absolutely. Well, it's available on PBS Digital and on the Independent Lens YouTube channel. So any shares, absolutely. Please share it with your friends, your family, groups, work. Absolutely. And in terms of a second season, possibly. I mean, that would be great. And there has been... you know, everyone who sees it, loves it, is entertained by it, is educated by it. So yeah, hopefully, who knows? Fingers crossed.
Yeah, in the first two episodes of the next one, they're gonna be called Blind Men Who Foster.
Well, joking aside, one on blind parenting would be awesome. Seriously.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that would be awesome, yeah.
Be really awesome.
Yeah, we can get my wedding in there too.
Oh yeah, and yeah, we're all going to that for sure.
You know what? I'll sing for you, Eddie. I'll pull out some Luther Vandross for you.
There we go.
I think we're already all planning on it.
Can you do Lionel Richie? I'd rather have that.
Oh, true. Well, I have to research him a little bit.
I see that Christina's come back on the call, and I don't know if she or Miko have any questions. I think they both may have had questions.
I think my question was, is there going to be a continuation to this? You know, I really think that there's so much that you're giving to us, sort of putting the contemporary scene of dating and finding love into perspective for everybody. It's a really challenging game, right? Especially as all these new virtual environments have come into our lives, especially now with COVID. Right, so I think there's a lot there that people can connect to, and it's you know, it's something that I would like to see more.
Patty, you're getting your marching orders here.
Yeah, let's go. So you know, we are running out of time, and I do want to take a moment to thank everyone, to thank our moderator Elaine Gerber.
Thank you, Elaine.
Fabulous. I want to thank all our participants, Patty, Ben, Solomon, Joni, Mario, Simon, I see that you have such a beautiful dynamic and you've really bonded through the completion of this series. It comes through in the way you engage. So that's so heartwarming, you know? And thank you to the audience for joining us tonight. Thank you for all your questions and your energy. I do want to point out that Real Abilities New Jersey has many more events coming up in the next few weeks. So leading all the way up to the holidays, including a screening of Vision Portraits and a live conversation with creator Rodney Evans next week. And then the following week, we have a screening of Carol of the Bells and a special interview between Elaine Katz of the Kessler Foundation and Joey Travolta, right? And that is coming at the beginning of December. I want to encourage everyone to connect with us, look all our upcoming events at Real Abilities New Jersey, connect with us on social, right, to keep the conversation going and be in the loop. And finally, I do want to wish everyone a very happy holiday season. Let's make the best of the end of this year, which has been extremely challenging. Mm-hmm. Right. And everyone stay healthy, be well. Right. And here's to a 2021 that is a little more engaging and interactive.